Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, pushing the boundaries of credulity. In Copenhagen, not Copen Ten Hag's Man United, blow the lead twice at Parken. We dissect a multi-story Parken trip and the rest of the midweek Champions League action. Meanwhile, in North London, call it post-cognitive dissonance, we look back on Spurs, Chelsea, the nine men, the five disallowed goals, and a side so wedded to highlights Snoop Dogg might have been managing. Plus, if time, a line on Chelsea, Man City, and the weekend in prospect in the Premier League in this Totally Football Show. Thursday the 9th of November. Hello, listener. And hello, too, to Raphael Honigstein.
Hello, James.
Tom Williams.
Hello, James.
And Duncan Alexander.
Hello, James.
All right. Nice calm week, eh?
Oof.
Hey?
I can't remember the last time 3 or 4 days of football produced quite so much chaotic material.
The fixture computer mysteriously gave us Tottenham-Chelsea in a week when it knew both teams weren't in Europe, in a European week. Totally randomly, so that was good. And we progressed from there.
Rafa, you've enjoyed it?
I've enjoyed it very much, James. I always enjoy watching games in your company.
Oh, that's very kind of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Well, we'll relive some of that action today. We're going to be talking about Spurs, of course. Well, not ahead too, as I mentioned, the action this weekend. But we're going to begin with the Champions League. Match day 4, of course, Tuesday and Wednesday. It saw Real Madrid, Real Sociedad, Bayern Munich, Inter and Man City all booking their places in the knockout round with 2 games to spare. Meanwhile, Celtic, Benfica, Antwerp, Union Berlin, Salzburg, Young Boys and Sfernas Vesta all saw their qualifying hopes ended. Shakhtar Donetsk is still in it after they got a mighty win against Barcelona on Tuesday as well. Milan beating PSG and Dortmund doing the double on Newcastle to turn Group F upside down. Meanwhile, Wednesday in Denmark, the latest installment of top-rating soap opera Man United, this chapter entitled, as per the Copenhagen pre-game banner, Theatre of Your Nightmares.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Øyvind trykker de på FC København. De kæmper for at holde sig alligevel. Det er stadigvæk en stor chance!
Four-3 at Parken. Only the second maddest game of the week. 7 goals, 1 red card, 19 minutes of time added on. But an evening that started so well for United when things finally looked like they were going Ten Hag's way, falling apart in spectacular fashion. Rafa, you were kind of watching. I mean, we were all kind of watching this game on The Goals Show. Turning point, the red card.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then it wasn't. In a way, because United coped really well and took the lead.
Well, they didn't at first. So they go down to 10 men, but they were 2-0 up at this point. And the point we were making at the time was, you're 2-0 up against Copenhagen, who haven't won a Champions League game in 7 years. A little bit of game management, perhaps. Instead, 90 seconds later, they are already let one back. And then Copenhagen get that penalty for handball. But as you say, United get a handball, a roughly equivalent handball penalty of their own. And go back into the lead.
Yeah, and they looked good in the second half, I thought, United. From what I could see, they seemed like pretty comfortable. They didn't play a high line. They were very organised. Copenhagen didn't really create much. But then they crumbled in the last 7 minutes. Mm. And I think that's the unforgivable bit in a way. I mean, you will struggle against 11 men. You will concede chances against Copenhagen side who... For all the lack of results, have caused problems to all teams they play. They very nearly got something big from their trip to Galatasaray. They took the lead against Bayern. So they're quite awkward. I think last year they didn't lose a single game at home in the group stage.
They didn't win either, but yeah.
Still. So I thought United had done really well. It had sort of epic back to the wall, snatching a victory, headlines written all over it until they crumbled.
They crumbled 3-3 and then 4-3 scored by a 17-year-old named Rooney. Remember the name.
Named after?
Yeah.
Is he? Waza.
Was yeah, he was. Definitely.
Yes.
Are you sure about that?
Yes, his father was a big fan.
Why didn't he spell it correctly then?
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's a very good point.
I think it's nicer this way though, isn't it? As a first name?
Yeah, maybe.
Rooney Bargy.
And he looked brilliant.
If his middle name was George, for example, just imagine he'd be RG Bargy. Anyway, he looked brilliant, Tom.
RG, yeah, sorry, I had to think about that.
Yeah.
But it does work. It does work.
Or Onion.
Onion's the obvious one, yeah. No, he looked excellent. And he is obviously, a very highly rated young player. And he really brought something, a bit of dynamism to, what Copenhagen were trying to do. I think the first time he got the ball on the right-hand side, he sort of springs away from a couple of challenges and then blazes a shot wildly over the bar. And it was like, okay, well, here's a teenager getting a bit overexcited. But the composure that he showed for the winning goal was exceptional. And it was kind of ironic that United ended up having yet another nightmare evening, given the mockery that the TIFO that the Copenhagen fans had come up with, received both in the stadium from the United fans, because I think there was a chant of, what the effing hell was that? And then on social media. And then, what do you know? It proved
Garnacho
quite...
Garnacho as well, when they took that 3-2 lead, United, giving the
fateful
finger to the lips.
The fateful shushing, yeah.
So that noise you can hear currently is Man United supporters saying, what about the red card? That was never red, etc. You very dutifully glossed over it to avoid a lengthy breakdown, but some discussion probably warranted. At the time, there didn't seem to be an appeal for it, and we were all a bit surprised when VAR said that they were checking an incident. When you see the slow motion under still, it looks very, very serious indeed. Rashford stamping on an opponent's ankle. But should it have been red? Rafa?
I think it's hard not to give a red once you see it. It was easy not to see because it looked innocuous. Referee, I think, was unsighted. It happened in the corner. I think very few players had a clear view of it. That's why you didn't get any remonstrations, apart from possibly the man lying on the floor prostrate. The problem is that if you pull up sort of risky manoeuvres that involve putting your legs in the way of an opponent and they don't come off because you don't protect the ball as he's trying to do, you don't get your body between the opponent and the ball, but he actually just land on the opponent's ankle, it doesn't make a difference to him and his ankle whether you try to do it or not. And you cannot expect the referee to zoom into the mind of people to ascertain whether it was intentional or not, because they might not look the same way or they might look the same way. It cannot be a criteria for when a red card is a red card. If you do something that is dangerous, and this is dangerous, and you hurt your opponent, then there's a big chance you'll get sent off for it. And we might not like the law, and I think a lot of the reactions, people are saying he shouldn't be sent off sort of in an ideal world, but I don't think the referee has any choice.
I think that was the issue with the reaction. I felt like there was a bit of a collective head loss over this, in that as soon as you saw the replay, it was clearly a red card to me, because as Raf says, intent hasn't been part of the referee's approach to things for a long time.
Well, ever.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. But I think the reaction was a kind of emotional reaction from fans who don't want to see an important player sent off, from ex-pros who wouldn't have been sent off for that in their day. But we all know how the rules work these days. So why do we pretend that we live in some kind of an alternate universe where things like this are now, tolerated?
It was a moment where people wanted common sense rather than consistency.
Yes.
Yeah, so, one of those. Yes. Classic.
But it was also
consistent common sense, that would be the ideal.
That's all we ask for.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was quite a... The United players, I don't think I've ever seen a red card where everyone was either smiling or laughing before. They were like, it was a kind of, oh, this is ridiculous. But as you both say, it's a red card.
Copenhagen took advantage to come swarming back into the game. Then United took the lead. And then Copenhagen ended up 4-3 winners. The second 4-3 that United have had on the road this season.
United have conceded 11 goals in four games. And I think that is the story of the group stage. You cannot concede that many goals and expect to progress. I mean, they might still do it, but you have to defend better.
Have they also conceded a penalty in every single Champions League group stage
game? They have.
Game? And although that they feels sort the of only team in the last 20 years to achieve that remarkable feat?
Correct.
It does feel less spectacular as a stat because you're almost now conditioned to a Champions League game having at least one penalty. Because UEFA are extra, extra officious when it comes to clamping down on handballs. The interpretation is much stricter than in the Premier League, for example. And unfortunately, they often find things. Once you start looking, you find things. And I can understand more the frustration with the handballs in this game. They were a little bit soft. Very little distance between the ball and the offending arm. And that's sort of the handball that I think really nobody wants to see. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there are people at UEFA saying the more goals, the better. Let's find more goals. But I think that feels sort of unnatural to be that strict when it comes to these situations. But yeah, we'll see. I think UEFA and the Champions League produce more VAR incidents because they are trying to be, so we say the application of the rules is stricter and less sort of concerned with free-flowing and letting things go than in the Premier League and some others.
Yeah, they did it in the Premier League in 2020-21 season at the start, and we were on course to go over 300 penalties, and then everyone went, hang on.
I remember.
Well done, Copenhagen. Right back in the qualifying mix. They move level, in fact, with Galatasaray. Bayern already qualified, already guaranteed top spot with their 12 points from this group. Then you've got Galatasaray and Copenhagen on 4 points, and Man United on 3. Next time, in 3 weeks, Matchday 5 sees United heading to Istanbul. Ooh. And then they host Bayern, who already qualified. Who's getting out of the group?
Bayern, I think.
You think?
Beyond that. I mean, United on paper should be capable of going to Galatasaray and beating Galatasaray, but something tells me they might not.
Well, then the last game, being against a Bayern team that's already qualified, Rafa, how much will Bayern be committing to that game? It's United. It's Harry Kane against United, perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is for United, they might be out by that point. Because if they lose against Galatasaray, that's it. If they are still alive in this group, then I think they have a decent chance because the way things are going with a squad very thin, Thomas Tuchel might rotate a little bit for that game and might not take it that seriously. It doesn't strike me as the kind of coach who's really concerned with setting new records in the group stage or equaling other records when it comes to maximum points and this kind of stuff. The squad is thin enough as it is. And with 2 weeks to go at that moment until the end of the first half of the season of Bundesliga, he might just think, you know what, let's rest a couple of players.
But as you say, the die may be cast in Istanbul. Right. 2 weeks before that.
I mean, a bit like not putting your best penalty taker on the fifth penalty. Don't put United Bayern on match day six, because if both are out, it could be the worst clash between them ever. Just a Carabao Cup match, essentially.
You were talking about the fixture computer. My conspiracy theory, and I really do not subscribe to many of them, is that they do that on purpose to give the two top-seeded teams a maximum chance of going through.
Finish on a positive, Tom, from United?
Yeah, Rasmus Højlund, another two goals in this Champions League campaign. He is joint top scorer with Alvaro Morata. And I think this was one of the big frustrations for United, was that they started the game so well. Højlund puts them ahead in the third minute with a really nicely constructed goal. Aaron Wan-Bissaka down the flank to Scott McTominay, who squares it for Højlund, scoring the kind of goal that he was signed to score, a little six-yard box tap-in, second goal, and actually scoring that first goal enabled United to then play on the counter-attack, which is what they are, you know, much more comfortable doing than playing the more progressive football that Erik ten Hag might want them to play. Second goal from a counter-attack, Bruno Fernandes releases Garnacho, who probably should have passed, but who ends up supplying an assist because his shot is parried and Højlund gets another tap-in. And then, the Rashford red card sort of shifts the dynamic and United failed to react to it. And I think there was a feeling that Ten Hag's decision to take Højlund off when he did backfired. He was starting to look a little bit tired, but he was replaced by Mason Mount, and it just meant that United had no kind of outball whatsoever.
So that's how they ended up. So that was the second turning point.
What I mean, there were probably about 17 turning points in this game. But I mean, that was one.
But they were ahead 3-2, and then there was this last Copenhagen comeback. Was there anything specific that led to that shift? Because we were dipping in and out of the game, but it looked like United were in control even with 10 men.
Yeah, I mean,
last 15.
Højlund went off just after the Copenhagen equaliser. I think the biggest issue with the last two goals that United conceded was just like glaring mistakes. So the first goal stems from this kamikaze back pass that Aaron Wan-Bissaka fires into Andre Onana at like chest height that Onana can't really do anything with. And from the subsequent throw-in, I think it was.
It's a corner, I think.
They score. And then Rafa Varane again on the bench for the third game running, who came on in place of the injured Johnny Evans, is presented with a fairly simple ball to control by Harry Maguire and somehow allows it to just spring up at him like a kind of over-exuberant, you know, family pet.
Yeah, a Labrador, perhaps.
A Labrador, say. Concedes possession and then, within a few seconds, Copenhagen have scored the winner.
Diego Dallo not covering himself with glory on either of those as well, I think.
No. He did not. So on the one hand, some promise in attack, the turning point of the Rashford red card, but ultimately, once again, United's failure to handle positions where they're being put under pressure. And that was the problem in the closing minutes of the first half, when Copenhagen, were allowed to come back into the game and equalise, and then in the closing minutes of the game itself, where Copenhagen won it.
All right. Well, there you go. 10 times ahead for Ten Hag. And next up, let's catch up on the other midweek headlines.
Before you get back to this Athletic podcast, did you know it's just one of many made by The Athletic every week? I'm Abby Patterson, senior producer here at The Athletic, and I get to work across so many of our shows. But even I have my favourites. Sometimes you're just too busy for a full-length podcast. I get it. We've all been there. Well, we've got a show to help you. Get up to speed with all the football stories you need to know about with our daily football briefing.
It's done and dusted. Saudi Arabia will host the 2034 World Cup.
Got a bug for the women's game? Then Full Time Europe is for you. It's our dedicated women's football podcast answering the questions you're asking from the WSL and Champions League.
So what's going wrong at Arsenal?
But perhaps you want to know exactly how a team has set itself up. Then come to the audio whiteboard and join Michael Cox and our analytics gurus as they dissect and examine the game like nobody else can. That's on the Athletic Football Tactics podcast.
I don't think I've ever seen a striker who reads the game so well.
Just search The Athletic wherever you're listening to this podcast now, and you'll find your next podcast obsession in no time at all. Now, let's get back to your show.
We're sponsored for this episode of The Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to The Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. This is The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Jetzt der 2 gegen 1 Konter. Brandt und Sabitzer gegen einen Spieler von Newcastle. Julian Brandt vollendet diesen Konter zum 2-0.
Elsewhere on match day 4, routine win for Man City. They're through, as we mentioned before. Arsenal beating Sevilla. They now need just a point from their last two games. Saka scoring one, setting up the other, but then maybe going off injured. We'll get more from our Emirates correspondent Duncan Alexander later on. Rafa, Group F for effing exciting, saw yet more drama. First on Tuesday, Newcastle losing at Borussia Dortmund. Thoughts?
Well, Dortmund were good. Second time running in, against this opposition. They surprised us all with their performance at St. James's. And perhaps surprised a few others as well after bouncing back from that 4-0 defeat at home to Bayern to beat Newcastle again. And a lot of people in Germany who haven't seen much of Newcastle were very disappointed over the two legs, because they thought the fourth best team in England, in a group, in a league as good as the Premier League, they should be offering more. But they had not a lot going for them, really, especially going forward. That is, of course, true. But
had it been somebody else rather than Joe Linton with that chance, maybe.
Maybe. No, the injury problems are well documented, but, you know, a lot of teams have injury problems, and you need to have a squad big enough if you want to fight on all four fronts as far as they're concerned. But no, I mean, Dortmund, I think we have to give them some credit because they defended really well, which has not always been their forte. Yet again, did not concede a goal. And played with some real conviction and took their chance really well. It was a great goal for Brandt. The first one was a bit lucky with the way it was sort of constructed or came about in the box, but great finish from Niklas Füllkrug.
Bundesliga top scorer last season, just getting this stat in with 16 goals.
Yeah, joint top scorer.
All right.
With a chap called Christopher Nkunku, who I think is going to be an absolute revelation once he starts playing for Chelsea.
Okay.
But it's interesting,
16 goals enough last year to get you the
Torschützenkönig
title.
Or Torjägerkanone. That's the actual trophy.
That's the one.
Das Capricanieri, I call it.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
And Harry Kane's already on 15.
I think he's going to smash Füllkrug's record from last year. I got a feeling.
Got a hunch.
But he's already halfway to, is it Gerd Müller's record of 30 goals in a debut Bundesliga season?
Wow.
And he's already halfway there, and it's not even mid-November.
It's just madness. Just madness. The Borussia Dortmund fans, with a big message for UEFA pre-game: you don't care about the sport, all you care about is money. And then throwing kind of facsimile gold bars at the pitch.
Yeah, they were not real gold bars.
Not real gold bars.
No. But also some nice scenes, because the Newcastle fans held up a banner thanking Dortmund for charging them less than £20 for a ticket.
Change from £20, thank you, BVB.
Yeah, and then Dortmund in turn thanked them for being good sportsmen and being very nice to them.
And then they all watched Alfreda St. Pat.
Yeah.
Lovely stuff.
Well, so the bottom line is that Dortmund now have their fate in their own hands, as it were. One win from the next two games would be enough. So that's either away to Milan or at home to PSG. And if you told me, James, before this Group F had started, that Dortmund might actually win it, of course it's not done yet, they might still get knocked out, I would not really have believed it. But
I would advise on waiting a little bit longer. Two match days ago, it was Newcastle who were top.
Yeah.
Two match days later, they're bottom. There are two match days still to go. A lot can change. Next time out, Newcastle will be going
at PSG.
They're at PSG. And Dortmund will be at Milan. Milan, who themselves produced a pretty remarkable performance on Tuesday at home to Paris Saint-Germain. Paris Saint-Germain had beaten them 3-0 at the Parc des Princes 2 weeks before. Milan famously had not scored a single goal, not only this year in the Champions League, but for their last five Champions League encounters. They went behind here to that goal from Milan Skriniar. So, a Milan opening the scoring. Yeah. Nice. But then, remarkable, Rafa Leão, and then the magnificent Olivier Giroud. Perhaps the real story of this game, though, a breakout performance for Milan for Ruben Loftus-Cheek.
Well, L'Equipe compared him to prime Patrick Vieira
in their
report on the game. So they were very impressed. They were much more impressed with him than they were with any of PSG's players.
Right. What else did they say, Tom?
Well, I think the feeling from the sort of French perspective is that this was another example of PSG just failing to raise their level in the Champions League, in that after getting thrashed at Newcastle. They went on a run of 5 wins in all competitions, which included that 3-0 win against Milan in the reverse fixture. Looked like they were starting to make a bit of progress and get into grips with this slightly peculiar hybrid 4-2-4-4-3-3 system that Luis Enrique has introduced. Obviously took the lead with that Skriniar goal at San Siro. But a recurrent theme with PSG has been that although Luis Enrique spends a lot of time talking about control, they have these extremely kind of open matches very often. And that was the case, particularly in the first half here, end to end. And, you know, Milan equalised, Rafael Leao overhead kick, I think 3 minutes after PSG had gone ahead. And then Giroud, you know, scores the winner 5 minutes into the second half. And PSG just never really felt, despite having a lot more of the ball than their opponents, which is another recurrent theme of their matches, they didn't ever really seem to be fully in control of the game. And it puts them at real risk of being eliminated in the group phase. And the talk at PSG prior to the start of the season was that the Champions League was no longer an obsession. It's no longer the thing that drives the club. What's most important is finding a style of football that the fans really enjoy, where the players think they can express themselves, getting rid of all the big egos, blah, 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 blah. But I think if they were to go out in the Champions League, having spent as much money as they did over the summer, it would be a new low point on the very long list of Champions League low points in the Qatari era.
The group stands with Dortmund on 7 points, PSG on 6, Milan on 5, and Newcastle on 4. So only 3 points off top spot themselves. Elsewhere, Group H sees Shakhtar Donetsk back in the mix. They're 3 points behind the joint leaders Barcelona and Porto after beating Barca on Tuesday 1-0. Adam Crafton saluting Shakhtar, who, as he points out, beat the Catalans with a lineup of 9 Ukrainians, a Georgian, and 1 18-year-old Brazilian. Only 4 of the Ukrainians started a game for their country during the last international break. Spectacular upset, and that's before you remember they're functioning in a war. Barcelona only had 1 shot on target in that game. Better was to come from other Spanish sides midweek. Real Sociedad, who beat Benfica, the hapless Benfica, I think, 3-1. Colin Miller equally pointing out that boss Imanol Aguacil has been the youth coach at Real Sociedad for 7 years, and 6 of their 11 in this game played under him in those youth sides. 9 other youth graduates of the club's academy on the bench. Very special sporting institution. Atletico Madrid, meanwhile, Tom, did you see this? The 6-0 against Celtic?
I saw all the goals. Yeah. Antoine Griezmann with a double, putting the strings. He's now 5 goals away from becoming Atletico's all-time top scorer. But whose record would he beat?
Oh, is it Luis Aragonés?
It is indeed Luis Aragonés.
Yeah. Well, plenty happened in that game. Much of it Atletico scoring, but there was also an early and possibly very influential red card, which saw Dyson Maeda sent off. Rafa, Tom and Duncan just reviewing this now, giving it our own little VAR.
It's a definite red card.
Definite red, they say. Duncan?
Well done, boys. Good process.
Thank you very much.
Give me another angle. Hold on.
Also,
hold on, Dunks. Let me see it again. Hold it. Delay.
He's done him.
Oh,
nothing I can do now.
A quick word, Rafa, on another of the big surprises, which was Italian champions Napoli, who had what looked like one of the easiest games of the midweek, taking on an Union Berlin side who only lose 12 straight games in all competitions, lost every single one, hadn't scored in the last 5, was it?
Something like that. I mean, every bad thing has to come to an end, James, well, I'd like to believe. And that terrible run of 12 games of consecutive defeats came to an end.
Yeah.
Snatched a draw, yeah, and they actually deserved it as well.
Okay,
played decently
them.
In the second half. Good counter-attacks. Chelsea future legend David Fofana with a goal. Very happy for Union.
The Italians less delighted with the result. Yeah. It's on his papers. All here we go again. Rudy Garcia. The owner was in the dressing room after the game.
Does that strike you like a good fit, Napoli and Rudy Garcia?
Yeah,
James.
Yeah. Well, maybe some changes there soon. We shall see. With that, the state of play in the Champions League, and we'll return to the Arsenal game against Sevilla a little bit later on. Next up, let's move on to the Premier League and, Monday night's action at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Hello, listeners. Danny Kelly here, host of The View from the Lane, your dedicated Spurs podcast from The Athletic. Myself, Charlie Eccleshare, James Moore, and Tim Spears are with you twice a week, every week this season, as we bring you all the news and views you could ever possibly want from in and around the club. Listen for free wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to follow and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode of The View from the Lane.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Sports Podcast Awards Soccer Podcast of the Year.
Better from Chelsea, I think they're more likely to work in position doing this. There.
James, Sterling's in here, Jackson's with him, Raheem Sterling, Jackson scores at last! Finally they crack the code!
Premier League, just 3 points separating the top four now. City, Spurs, Liverpool and Arsenal. After Monday's happening at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, which, in the words of Peter Drury, not usually one to do the overstatement, pushed back the boundaries of credulity. Two sent off, five disallowed goals, 21 added minutes. Spurs won, Chelsea 4. It was madness. And in the days that followed, as pundits stumbled through the debris, bewildered, the kind of whispered notion that circulated amongst them was that Spurs, who lost, actually came out of the game with lots more credit than Chelsea.
I'm not sure I'd go quite that far. But I mean, I think you have to give Spurs credit for the role they played in turning the game into the ridiculous spectacle that it became. In that, I think first half, with the stoppages, the disallowed goals, the red card, the penalties, etc., I found myself thinking, this is like a stupid game of football. Like, this is a farce.
Mm.
But then the second half was so ridiculous that it was one of the greatest things I think I'd ever seen. And just the spectacle of this very important game between two of the biggest clubs in the land in the biggest league in the world at the heart of this billion-dollar industry, basically boiling down to a running race from the halfway line between the Tottenham defenders
sprint challenge too.
And the Chelsea attackers. And for about half an hour, that's what it was. And you just thought, if Chelsea can time a through ball and a run here, they will score a goal. And they just couldn't for the longest time. And it was absolutely sensational.
To put some numbers on that, in the Premier League since 2018-19, basically Spurs allowed 9 high through ball attempts in that period. No other team has done more than 3 in that scenario. So it was, you're right, it was mad. It was like the world's most expensive game of What's the Time, Mr. Wolf. And eventually, Nicholas Jackson knew what time it was. It was hat-trick time.
That the English equivalent of Ox am Berg?
I'm not sure.
Tell us about how Ox am Berg.
So you face the wall.
Yeah.
And every time you face the wall, the other children players can come forward.
Also known as grandmother's footsteps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Depending on, you know, what kind of family you have, I guess.
A bit more exciting if it's a wolf rather than your grandma.
Well, as I say,
it depends on your grandma and your relationship with her, I suppose.
Yeah.
Anyway, but it had that, maybe it is a very apt comparison, because it had that kind of childlike, crazy, lots of people making bad decisions. Vibe to it. And that's why I think it's very hard to ascribe to any team a particular amount of credit, because Spurs were ridiculous. I mean, I'm not talking so much about the tactical lineup. You can choose your poison against 10 men when you're only down to 8. But the two sendings off were just insane. And Udoka should have already probably been sent off earlier for absolutely crazy challenge, which I haven't seen, I think, in 20 years in the Premier League. Mm.
Particularly when they started the game so well. The first part of the game was all really down the Spurs end until the action shifted a little bit to the west and Stockley Park.
But Raf said, the game literally changed after that tackle. That was what sort of fired Chelsea up. And a man called Destiny changing the course of the game, etc. and so on. But yeah, it was Spurs could have gone 2-0 up. Son was narrowly offside. And if that had gone in, I think Spurs might have won 4-5. And it changed in that mad couple of minutes.
Okay. You had that tackle, then you had Sterling, who looked like he'd equalised, but that was disallowed. Then Caicedo scored, but then that was disallowed. But then they went back and said, no, actually, that's a Romero red, and it's a penalty now. And this time, Cole Palmer does score, but we're not done with the Stockley Park action, because then Nicholas Jackson scores, but that's disallowed. And then towards what should have been the end of the first half, kind of 42-3 minutes, you get both James Maddison and Van de Ven going off injured. Then the second half, 10 minutes into that, you get the second red.
Yeah, so this is when it sort of went full on through the looking glass. Udogie, who's already been booked for that appalling two-footed lunge on Raheem Sterling in the first half, gets a second yellow. Spurs find themselves down to 9 men, having also lost Maddison and Van de Ven. And that's the point at which they take up permanent residency on the halfway line. And then it's just, OK, Chelsea, let's see what you've got.
The beauty is the commentators say, well, Spurs have been very, very brave with 10 men, but now they'll have to shut up what's left of the shop.
No.
Cue the charge of the Light Brigade.
It's not what they do, mate.
It's interesting because obviously we've already seen Liverpool go down to 9 men at that stadium this season. And they went for the other approach, which is, you know,
slightly more conventional.
But that didn't work either, eventually. So, I mean, it was refreshing. You know, it was. Everyone's kind of gone, oh, yeah, Postecoglou's got these principles, but there must be a point at which he abandons them.
Well, how close did it come to paying off? It was not until the 74th minute that Chelsea went ahead. And then you had that massive chance. You had the
Eric Dier
disallowed goal.
Another disallowed
goal. You had the Sun chance post 90 minutes to make it 2-2.
What added to the drama as well was that when Chelsea's forward players kept being called offside, it was predominantly Nicholas Jackson and Mikhailo Mudryk, who were two players who we know are desperate for form, desperate for goals. I mean, any player running through wants to score, but these two really, really needed to score. And Mudryk's one of the fastest players I've ever seen. He was more offside than anyone. There's that one particular still that I think Jamie Carragher posted on Twitter, and one of the Chelsea defenders is about to clip a pass over the top. And Mudryk is already 10 yards offside, and Jackson's about 5 yards offside. It was extraordinary.
To be fair, I think coming up against this kind of high line with 2 men up probably scrambles with a kind of...
All your learned behaviour.
Yeah, because it's just nothing that you'll ever would have ever experienced before and probably will never experience before. And admittedly, I mean, Chelsea did a lot of stupid things and didn't cover themselves in glory. And I was really tempted to write, this is one of the most embarrassing things I've ever seen. Luckily, I held it in, as it were, not to expose myself to more criticism than usual. But they took a long time to figure out the way to beat this.
How to get through this
trap.
Partially open door, which Spurs
this huge exhaust pipe.
Yeah. And when they did go through and were onside, there was one man there who was pulling off incredible saves, Vicario.
Yeah, one in particular where he kind of dives forward and out, and it's amazing. I mean,
he sprints forward to make that as well.
I mean, he's arguably the best keeper in the Premier League this season. And this game, you know, he probably one of the few players to come out of this game with credit, really.
So credit after this game, as mentioned, there is this notion that Spurs go away. They went out in a blaze of glory. There's much for them to be proud of. Many positives to take forward. That they were the real winners, and I guess. By the same token, Chelsea, although 4-1 victors, are the real losers. What do we think?
I don't think there are any winners from this game, apart from the watching audience who saw probably one of the top 5 games in Premier League history in terms of just sheer...
Yeah. And also, when do you watch a football match and think, I've never seen such a thing in my life?
You can judge it by... People were saying... Like on Twitter, people like, this is what Twitter was like 10 years ago, because everyone was so engaged with it. You know, there were 5 disallowed goals in the match. It was just mad.
But we should also mention that for those at the game, it was a bit of a nightmare because they had no idea what was going on half of the time. when the Sterling goal was ruled out.
Are you talking about the Chelsea forwards?
Yeah, maybe. When the Sterling goal was ruled out, and they also then checked the possible red card for the Beckham flick from Romero, I know from people texting, they just had no idea. And I think all the enjoyment that we had sitting at home, unfortunately, only a fraction of that was enjoyed by those in the stadium. And I think that's a bit of a shame. And I think it should be communicated a lot clearer at the very minimum to inform people why things aren't stopping and why we have to play 57 minutes in the first half.
That's one reaction. Postecoglou had another one afterwards suggesting that VAR was not something that really has a place in the game. At least that's the way I interpreted his comments. For all the pride of their performance and how close they came to actually getting something from this game, those two late goals from Nicholas Jackson really rounding out the score, Tottenham essentially lost a game that they started really well, lost two of their best players to injury and lost another two to a ban. So they'll be facing... Wolves away this weekend without three...
From what's the time, Mr. Wolf? To 12:30 on Saturday, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's going to be an interesting
tricky clash.
And Wolves have beaten Man City at home, notably, this season. So
they had Neto then.
They did have Neto.
As for Chelsea, they this weekend, having beaten one Premier League league leader on Monday, must try and beat another Sunday at 4:30 at Stamford Bridge. A rematch, of course, of a big Champions League final not so long ago. They've met plenty of times since then. In fact, they met four times in the course of last season. Man City won every single game and I think didn't concede a single goal. Is that right? So will this be any different?
I mean, probably not. In the sense that City, I think by common consensus, haven't, you know, really hit their straps yet. And yet they are top of the league and they're the top scorers and they've got the best defence in the country. And Haaland started banging in goals for fun again. And they're into the last 16 in the Champions League without really breaking sweat. And there is just this sort of this feeling of inevitability about City.
They did lose John Stones, unfortunately, in midweek.
They did, which is obviously, you know, bad news for City, bad news for him, you know, robs England of a key player, but he hasn't really played much this season anyway. So I don't think you can say that they will necessarily miss him. You know, their squad is so deep. It's just such a kind of well-constructed machine. And I found myself thinking this, you know, watching the highlights of the game against Young Boys in midweek. I mean, Young Boys didn't have a single shot. And this is theoretically one of, you know, part of the European elite. They didn't have a single shot. They didn't force a single corner. City could have won 8 or 9-0. In the end, you know, 3-0 probably flattered Young Boys quite a lot. And this is, you know, this is just what City do. They kind of quietly, remorselessly crush everything in their way.
Even without Rodri.
Even without Rodri. Yeah.
Scary stuff.
Yeah.
He will definitely be back for Sunday, that's for sure.
I mean, what I would say for Chelsea is that their problems against eight-man Spurs, notwithstanding, eight outfield players, I'm getting the sense from watching them that things are beginning to click. I thought that the pressing, yes, can be a little bit ropey, but at least the players are all trying to do what Pochettino is telling them. I thought that they looked good on the break against Arsenal, where they were perhaps a little bit unlucky to not win the game. And I think they can make this a pretty even and interesting game. They're clearly not the finished article yet, but I'm beginning to get the feeling that no matter how many players are being chucked at Pochettino, his coaching is beginning to prevail and to make some order out of the mess and madness that is endemic at Stamford Bridge.
2-2 it finished at that ground against Arsenal, and a 1-1 equally at Stamford Bridge against Liverpool back on the opening round of the season. So arguably against the stronger sides, the leading sides, they fare better. But
I mean, they've saved their best performances in the league at least for games against the top sides. And when they've come unstuck, it's been against, you know, I mean, losing at home to Brentford in the most recent home game at a time when we thought they might have turned a corner. But there is at least as Raf was saying, there's more of a sense of stability now in terms of the starting 11, that midfield trio of Caicedo and Fernandez and Conor Gallagher looks pretty settled. Cole Palmer's been great, and he's playing, he's got a message to send, and he's against his former club. I think he's playing a much bigger role than a lot of people perhaps anticipated when he arrived at Chelsea in the summer. You know, Raheem Sterling is
has he got a message to send as well?
May also have a message to send. So that, yeah, you can see the direction of travel.
And Reece James is back, and
Reece James is back, which makes a huge difference.
So I think we've talked ourselves into
a resounding Chelsea win, which will almost certainly not happen.
Cat among the pigeons, if so. As it stands, Man City on 27 points, Spurs a point behind, and then 2 points behind them, three from Man City, are Liverpool and Arsenal. This weekend, see Spurs, as mentioned, taking on Wolves Saturday lunchtime with a whole host of players. Look out for Hwang Hee-chan, who's been involved with 8 goals this season, scoring and assisting in each of his last 5 games. Liverpool, meanwhile, will be hosting Brentford that Sunday at 2 o'clock. The Bees haven't won at Anfield for 86 years. However, they are on a 3-game winning streak, and they haven't made it 4 top-flight wins in a row in 84 years. So what does that mean? I don't know, but we may find out Sunday. Liverpool, of course, will have had a trip to Toulouse in the meantime, this Thursday evening as we record, where they're looking to maintain their 100% record in the Europa League. As for Arsenal, well, we'll talk about them after this.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
9th of November. Do you know what happened on the 9th of November many years ago? Roy Keane. Roy Keane inventing the term prawn sandwich brigade. Although he didn't say brigade.
Yeah.
It's a bit like, alas, poor Yorick.
Mm.
But he said they have a few drinks and probably the prawn sandwiches, and they don't realise what's going on the pitch of people who hadn't taken their seats for the second half. This became prawn sandwich brigade, and for ages was one of the go-to phrases to describe the metamorphosis of the, at least the kind of football consuming public. I'm not sure if people use prawn sandwich brigade anymore.
I think you still hear it. I think if you're looking for a kind of, you know, knowing reference to the corporates,
right,
and the hospitality boxes, you might get a cheeky prawn sandwich reference.
It was always a very strange example. You can get a prawn sandwich in a really bad garage on any road in England. It doesn't seem like the most opulent food.
But in a Keane household,
I guess.
Man, those prawn sandwich days, you look forward to them.
Does it not refer to the fact that it's a slightly effete in terms of your, in terms of the food that you choose?
It's not a man sandwich, James, is it?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's not a man
sandwich. What's a manly sandwich?
Well, a pie.
This isn't me saying
a man sandwich is two slices of bread with a pie in the middle.
Well, that's a Wigan kebab. That's
not a Wigan kebab. Well, there you go. Case closed.
Rafa, did you struggle with the term prawn sandwich brigade when you arrived here? Is there any equivalent? The Dortmund fans, for example, who were protesting against UEFA, do they have a similar?
So yeah, the idea that that prawns are sort of not befitting for real football man is widely spread in Germany. 20 years ago, Uli Hoeneß was complaining that players weren't professional enough. He said 30 minutes after the final whistle, they're already playing cards again and having jokes and eating their scampies. And I have a sleepless night.
And I've had a sleepless night.
Yeah. So
I've had a sleepless night after eating scampi.
I guess prawns are sort of the they epitomise sort of a laissez-faire, don't really care about the game kind of attitude.
Right.
And Bayern famously, or perhaps not so famously, tried very hard to sign Roy Keane. at one point, but it fell through.
What would have happened? Was it the Scampi?
I don't know. But it would have been very interesting.
He was poised, pen in hand, and the odour, the unmistakable prawny odour of a plate of Scampi drifted into the room. And
I think a lot of people don't realise Scampi is prawn.
I was just going to ask, what is Scampi?
What would it be
if Scampi
it was
is not shrimp.
Prawn?
Shrimp and prawn.
Prawn as well.
Really? Prawn's a bigger shrimp.
I say this absolutely. I told someone a few months ago that Scampi was battered prawns, and they blew their mind.
What did they think it was?
I'm not sure. They
magic
were like
goo.
Well,
I thought it was just kind of general crustacea kind of bit.
I mean, to be accurate, scampi are shrimp, and prawns are gamberoni because they're bigger.
Well, in Italian,
yeah.
Yeah,
prawns cover the whole gamut of size.
Yeah, it's kind of a catch-all term for anything prawn-like.
I think it should be reclaimed. I think that ordinary fans should just start bringing prawn sandwiches.
I think if it was crayfish, it'd be different.
You could have said lobster. I mean, lobster is
lobster's next
to prawns on the slab.
But lobster's too much because
Roy respects lobster. I think that is a dish that a man in, you know,
something that scuttles around you don't want to touch.
No, but I think ordering lobster is one thing. You
eat it with
you
your
have
bare
lobster.
Hands.
Yeah, you break it apart.
Yeah.
It's a proper dish.
Yeah.
Whereas
not
your prawn,
like
sandwich,
prawn sandwiches.
What's that for? Tom, what do they say in other countries?
So I've got a couple of examples of prawn sandwich adjacent vocabularies.
Okay.
This is food related metaphors used to talk disparagingly about fans in other countries, but not necessarily about corporate fans.
All right.
So in the Netherlands, kaaskijkers, which means cheese watchers, this was coined by Co Adriaanse when he was the coach of AZ Alkmaar. And Alkmaar is a seat of Dutch cheese production. And he felt that the AZ fans weren't making enough of an effort to get behind the team. And he described them as cheese watchers.
Cheese watchers?
The idea being that as part of the cheese production process, some people have to keep an eye on the cheese, see how quickly it's ripening, and in his eyes, that was about as much as the fans in question were bringing to the support of their club.
I mean, outside of football as well, the idea that what you eat is in some way indicative of your moral foundations. The whole business that the Tories keep talking about, people eating avocados. And I think asparagus as well is a morally suspect
tofu.
Thing to consume.
Tofu.
Yeah, mung beans.
Munching. You have to munch tofu, I think.
Yeah.
And
then speaking of
munching,
on Monday actually. Sorry,
another one from Spain. Come pipas, meaning seed eater. Of course, you go to watch football in Spain, get your bag of sunflower seeds, and if you feel that, you know, a group of fans aren't making enough of an effort to get behind the team, you might dismissively refer to them as a bunch of seed eaters.
How do you
come
say that?
To the stadium? Come pipas.
Very nice.
So nine. And now you're armed. Next time you're watching, you know, a La Liga game and your fellow fans aren't making enough noise, you know exactly how to get into them.
Well, our friend Duncan here was watching a La Liga team on Wednesday, munching his pipas and that kind of thing. What were you eating? What did you consume at the Emirates? Apart from the thrilling Arsenal performance.
I had some Roundtree's fruit gums.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Old school.
Yeah.
Old school. So a 2-0 victory for Arsenal?
Yes. Very comfortable. Almost too comfortable. I mean, Sevilla didn't really have a shot till injury time, and he had offered nothing, really. I thought it was quite interesting. Trossard looked much better playing centrally compared to when he's been out on the left.
So they played him up the middle?
Yeah, although Havertz was also joining him in a kind of 4-2-4 a lot of the time. The opening goal was really good. I mean, Jorginho played a great pass through to Saka, who crossed it for Trossard. And I thought it was quite interesting, because obviously, go back to the start of this year, and there was a lot of upset from Arsenal fans that they only were able to sign Trossard and Jorginho in the window. And
look at him now.
Yeah, I mean, that is the thing. Some, you know, Havertz is obviously improving a bit as well, and sometimes it just takes a bit of time. Yeah, he played pretty well.
Missed that huge chance for a header.
Was a bad header, but the second half he had one from outside the box which curled just wide, which was good. But yeah, Arsenal looked good. I mean, the only negative from the game would have been there was a double substitution late on with Trossard and Martinelli going off, and a few Arsenal fans wanted Saka to go off as well, you know, for a rest. And then within literally 60 seconds of the happening, of the substitution, he got injured and couldn't continue.
And how serious is that?
I mean, it was that classic Saka injury of like a kick on the ankle, and, you know, we've seen him come back from that. You imagine with a home to Burnley at the weekend, you know, not the toughest fixture, and then an international break, that he might do what happened last time and be injured for that and miss England's games.
I see. Burnley arriving this weekend. Four defeats in a row. The Clarets have suffered the lowest scorers in the Premier League with just 8 goals from 11 matches. Anything else from Arsenal Seville?
I was going to say the Jorginho pass for the opening goal. For me, that is one of, if not the best kinds of pass in football. The pass from central midfield in behind a stationary fullback to a wide player coming onto the ball at pace. It's one of those games where suddenly, you know, you break through your opponent's... I was going to make a chess reference, but I couldn't remember the name of any of the pieces momentarily. What are they called?
The pieces, pawns. You've got pawns.
The pawns. You scatter the pawns prawns. And you're in at the...
The pawn, prawns, pawn brigade.
That's it. The pawn sandwich.
Careful with that one.
On the brain. No, you're right. And it was there was an audible like, ooh, when that pass was made. Because it was a brilliant... And I think
they put down their seeds.
Yeah, Jorginho was the captain, as he has been recently. And he was really good, you know. And it's a bit of a renaissance for him. And it's quite nice to see.
Lovely stuff. Also this weekend, Bournemouth host Newcastle. That's Saturday at 5:30. We'll see Eddie Howe and Callum Wilson heading back to the Vitality Stadium. It's 2 years, actually, this weekend since the Magpies appointed Eddie Howe.
Although, sorry, just on Callum Wilson, I think he's a doubt, isn't he?
Is he a doubt?
He came off at half-time against Dortmund, sadly for him.
Okay.
Hamstring sandwich brigade.
Yeah.
Eddie Howe coming in 2 years ago to Newcastle. They were 19th in the table back then. And worth pointing out that 8 of the players involved in Howe's first game in charge also featured in the win over Arsenal last weekend. So remarkable the extent to which he's improved the players that were already there.
Yeah, and also, I mean, inevitably, when the Saudis arrived at Newcastle, all of the headlines were about which players they might sign because, you know, football as an industry is obsessed with this idea that the only way to improve teams is to just buy new players. And I think what Howe has done, in tandem with some very intelligent targeted recruitment, is shown if you're a good coach, you can make the players you have better. And that's what very good coaches do.
This midweek, he fielded a side with 8 English players away at Dortmund, the first time that has happened in a Champions League match for 26 years.
Maybe that was the problem.
Yeah.
There you go.
I mean, just on that, both games, I do think, you know, it's been an incredible improvement by Newcastle in 2 years, but it's arguable it's been a little bit too fast. They've got to the Champions League too early, and I think the size of their squad and the experience of their squad is now... is being shown up, you know, trying to stretch themselves across 3 competitions. So
they have got a slightly mad amount of injuries, though, and all like in the same positions.
But the way they play, they're going to pick up. They're going to pick up injuries, and I don't think they factored in, you know, a Champions League group stage.
Newcastle may have got to the Champions League too early. Man United could be exiting it too early, as we've heard. They, in the meantime, this weekend, will be hosting Luton. Do you know when Luton's only ever victory away to Man United occurred? Go 18s.
1897.
It is 1897. Back when United were known as Newton Heath and played in green and gold. So this was actually Newton versus Luton back then.
Do you reckon anyone in 1897...
That was probably the hashtag.
Yeah, probably was.
Anyone in 1897 ate a prawn sandwich? Or had?
Probably rather cut off their own arms.
Doubt it.
You wouldn't dredge many sandwiches. Prawns out the ship canal in 1897.
No, and also the sandwich was a relatively new concept even in...
It's an 18th century.
18th century. Yeah. So, yeah, 100 years or so. But hadn't reached the level of Pret sophistication that we currently are used to. Man United, becoming Man United in 1902. Their record this season is, well, one of the worst ones in their history. 17 games played... 1-8, lost 9.
Yeah, they got... I mean, it's the most defeats they've had in the first 17 games since the year they got relegated from the first division, which is bad. But then Ten Hag can reach 30 wins in his 50th game in this game, which is good. So,
basically, what you're saying, Doug, is that stats are fundamentally meaningless.
No, it means that last year they were good and he built up the number of the win percentage there, and this year, not so good.
They haven't drawn a game. They're Jekyll and Hyde. Nor have Man City drawn a game, actually.
All right.
It's a Manchester thing.
Okay. Crystal Palace are taking on Everton. Pretty sure they have drawn games. Selhurst Park, by the way, is the least goaly ground in the division this season. They've actually had 2 nil-nil draws there already. There have only been 3 in the entire season in the Premier League. 2 at Selhurst Park. Aston Villa, Sunday 2 o'clock, will be taking on Fulham. Villa are one of these sides involved in the Thursday night action conference and in Villa's case in Europa League for others. Brighton, for example, in the Europa League.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I mean, Villa, who were absolutely flying, and then very unexpectedly lost at Forest last weekend.
They did.
Which I don't think anyone really saw coming.
No. So Brighton?
That's contributed absolutely nothing, but I've said it.
Petey,
I've
said nothing. It now.
Brighton are hosting Sheffield United Sunday at 2 o'clock, and they have a Thursday night game away in Amsterdam against Ajax, who were looking rubs, but all of a sudden have won two straight and leapt out of the relegation zone and could be a real menace to the slightly struggling Seagulls. We shall see. West Ham on Thursday night host Olympiakos, who beat them in Greece on match day 3, and they follow that up with a visit from Tom, your friend
Nottingham Forest.
This is the 2 o'clock game that will be on the TV. And Nottingham Forest may be in form with their one win streak. Hammers not so much. 3 Premier League defeats in a row. Ooh. Any thoughts there? Will they get things back on track here, etc.?
I mean, Forest are a much more redoubtable prospect at home. They don't travel quite so well. So, yes, I wouldn't have thought that West Ham will be unduly worried. But then having said that, they lost at home to Everton in their most recent home games. And I guess that, you know, teams have now figured out with West Ham that if you don't enable them to counterattack, they very often struggle. And I can't imagine that, you know, Forest are going to be sort of throwing everything at them and leaving huge gaps in behind. So yeah, it could be a fiddly one.
Nice. All right. Well, here's hoping we just get a nice normal weekend of Premier League action. That's all we're asking for.
No. We don't.
More madness?
Yeah, more madness.
Also, it's just before an international break, so we've got 2 weeks to get to grips with the madness.
You need to build some narrative up that people can go on about for a few days. So.
Yeah. Hashtag too much narrative.
I want to see a referee eating a prawn sandwich during a game. Causing outrage.
Who knows, Duncan? Maybe you will in this mad spectacle we call the Premier League. We'll be back Sunday evening to discuss what has taken place on the Totally Football Show. Do join us for that. Rafi, you'll be back next Tuesday for more Euro fun.
Yes.
Among the delights, we'll be discussing the Rome Derby, where, look at this, Sarri and Mourinho have been having pops at each other before the game. Lovely stuff. Excellent. For now, that's it. So many thanks to Rafa, to Tom, to Duncan, to Charlie and Rachel in the booth, and you listener. Have a great weekend, and we'll speak to you soon.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-IN-IOWA. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.